Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
This program was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Is yet again. I can firmly, kiddo, say no, and you can replay that in 10 years, all right? Because it would not happen. It would not happen. No, it wouldn't. However, for someone, it has happened, hasn't it, kiddo?
It has happened.
And while I'd rather,
what's,
to be fair,
what's happened?
I'd rather not dedicate time to this individual. But a man who once said, I would not take the job because I love Chelsea supporters so much, has done just that, hasn't he, gents? And listen, this is the Chelsea Fan Show, and we don't want to dedicate too much time talking about other people from other clubs, but this one we simply cannot ignore. Me and Matt Beadle here with Stamford Chidge and Jonathan Kidd of the Chelsea Fancast to talk all things Chelsea and an ex-Chelsea manager two times over who is now moved across London, or north of London, I should say, and has become the manager of Tottenham Hotspur.
Yes.
Fellas, your thoughts,
well,
please.
To be really honest, I know there's a lot of Chelsea supporters who are
up in arms.
Yeah, they're very angry and cross about it, but I can kind of understand it. But there is no such thing as loyalty in football. And he is a professional manager. So, frankly, he's entitled
What's
to go...
Getting, 12 million?
Yeah, he's entitled to go wherever he likes. I mean, yeah. I think he summed it up very, very well in his press conference, which is saying that I have many clubs. You know, I'm wearing the Spurs pyjamas at the moment, but I am a man of many clubs. And that's true. You know, the only loyalty Mourinho has is to himself. I think if Chelsea fans have got anything to be rightly upset about, and that is the fact that, you know, Mourinho wastes no opportunity to have a dig at anybody that he's not currently being paid by. So when he went to United, he was sticking it to Conte, he was sticking it to the supporters, saying that we're rubbish and we don't support the team. You know, we've since then, every away side, every clever and funny and witty away support that comes to Stamford Bridge, Mourinho's right, your fans are, you know, so... And he's responsible for that. So
he did say that when he was Chelsea manager, though.
Well, he even said
that
it. True, you know. So I think they've got every right to be upset about that. I mean, I personally don't care.
You've written an article, haven't you?
They haven't put it up yet. They said they were going to put it up this morning. Anyway, in the article that I wrote, I said, look, all I really hope for, because I am hugely grateful to Mourinho and will always be grateful to him for the fact that he brought 8 trophies to the club. 3 Premier League titles. I never thought I'd ever see Chelsea win the FA Cup again, let alone, you know, mind you, we won that before he turned up. But I never thought we'd win the league, and he certainly helped us to do that. I'll always be grateful for that. I just hope and wish that he could show us the supporters who backed him right up to the moment and beyond when he was sacked the second time he was at the club. You know, most of the supporters were absolutely right behind him, even though we were 16th or 17th in the league at the time.
The players had given up on him.
Very few managers get that kind of support, and I think he needs to respect that. And I hope he shows us some, but I'm not going to hold my breath.
I think you're right when you say you don't really care, right, kiddo?
No, really.
And I was asked the question before we came on air on Love Sport Drive, and they said, oh, do you think they'll be up in arms? And I said,
no.
I can't. Part of me feels like too much time has passed now. You know, he spent, what, 2.5 years at Manchester United.
Well, it was
United.
When he went to United. For me, going to United is as bad as going to Tottenham.
Is it?
Yeah, well, Tottenham's worse for obvious reasons.
I think
they are
all the
our biggest
stories
rivals.
That accompanied
but
it,
I can't
that
stand
been,
United, so I hated the fact
there were stories accompanying it that this was the team he'd always wanted to manage.
Oh, yeah, yeah, there was.
And
there?
He cried when Van Gaal was appointed. Yeah. Whether that was rubbish or not, I don't know. But that seemed to be a kind of turning the screw kind of criticism of him. But, he's deeply flawed as a manager. There's a possibility now that he's actually too old-fashioned the way he plays. He might give them some solidity. I hope he's changed. He seemed to be slightly more affable in his approach. But
he was like that when he turned up at us. Remember?
He was like that when he turned
Mr.
up
Happy,
at United.
The happy one.
That's right. That's right.
And then
it's
he became the morbid, spiteful, vitriolic one.
But I think what happens, the impression I don't quite understand. I don't get the match because
it's a match made in hell. Mate.
Well, he seems to be a manager who likes to diss the players and say that he hasn't got the right sort of players for the team that he wants to play with. This is what he did at United, didn't he? And
demand that the board need class eggs to make an omelette.
Yeah. But of course, the reality was that and to be fair to him, the best team that he ever I've ignored you.
Great Mourinho expression.
Yeah, very great, very, very good impression. Yeah. My train of thought has been interrupted.
I'm
now,
so
Chinch,
sorry.
Thank you. Anyway, as I was saying before, I was strangely interrupted. The best team that he ever had ever played was Milan, Inter Milan, because he didn't have a great side, but he made them into a Champions League winning side, and that's where he has the alchemy to make something work. So I don't understand why he then became I must have all these great players to make my team work, because the Milan side were just masters of the dark arts and weren't great, but he made them into a Champions League winning team.
He did
so
very well there, but I think he was still at the top of his game then.
Yeah, but I think also football at the time hadn't evolved into what it's evolved into. And I think unless he's changed his philosophy, I don't think he's going to be a success there. But let's see, you know.
Mm. I mean, I hope that he's an absolute abject failure at Tottenham, obviously, because we don't want to see them do very well. But I'm amazed that he's gone to a club that we know, you know, Daniel Levy is legendarily tight-fisted in terms of transfers.
Completely.
They felt
Pulis was the right phrase for him,
well,
wasn't
that's
it?
Well, Alex, Alex coined the term, but he doesn't. I mean, Jody Morris made those comments on Sky a while ago, saying that there was a Chelsea manager who wanted to shut the academy down because he didn't see the point. And he didn't name who the manager was. And it had us all racking our brains as to who it might have been. I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was Mourinho. So, you know, unconcerned he was about trying to break any youngsters through.
But also
through.
This bizarre thing, that his statement that he made this week about saying how he was going to be looking at all the youth because he loved
the
youth.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because there's been suggestions, hasn't there, that he's had a little dig at both United and Chelsea, dig. And the fact that I've got a couple of the quotes here, you know, when he was asked about youth, and he said, you know, there's no manager that doesn't love to bring youth forward. The problem is that sometimes you get into clubs where the work that is below you is not good enough to produce these players. So I looked at our history, and you see that the academy is always giving talents the first team need. Of course, I always look forward to working with that profile. I'm pretty sure he had a good youth set up at Chelsea.
Well, we were winning. I mean, if you just look at the number of FA Youth Cups and European Youth Cups that Chelsea have won over the period since Roman turned up, and forgive me if I'm wrong, but Mourinho was around when we were doing that. So if he couldn't find use for some of those players, in fact, some of those players are now playing for the first team. So
he never ever put them into the first
team.
No,
he didn't. You know, what you have to understand with Mourinho, it's all about him. And he's kind of like, it's a bit like when you've got Diego Costa playing for you. We love Diego Costa because he would cheat, fight, punch, scratch, kick his way to do anything he could to win a game of football for your side. You love him when he's in your side, but if you're on the other side and you're the other side's fans, you hate him with a passion. He is a pantomime.
He's an animal.
And so that's the same with Mourinho as a manager. If he's your manager, everything he says and does is to gain some sort of a psychological or tangible advantage for your side, and you love him. But if he's not on your side, you can't stand him because you see through it and you see what he's about. It's either all about him or all about getting an advantage over the opposition.
Being able to see what he's about when he's managed your team, yeah. I have to say, I think that helps because you can see what psychological things he's doing. So when he goes to another team, you go, oh, he's doing that again, is he? Because he's managed you. He's done that with you.
Let's not get away from this. The reality is, as I said, you know, he helped Chelsea to win a lot of trophies while he was with us. Every single one of them I loved. I loved it when he was our manager. I supported him absolutely until the absolute last minute the second time around, even though I was being told by many people who were quite close to what was going on at the club how vitriolic and spiteful he had become. And he was. He was really poisonous and toxic for about 6 months
He played that very well, though, because he came across as being, look what's happening
but not
to
behind
me,
the
I can't
scenes.
Do it. No, indeed, behind the scenes, they were hating him.
Well, I find the whole thing quite bizarre, the fact that he's got another job in the Premier League, the fact that the media circus, which is what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer coined it as, is going to continue. I saw that Spurs actually denied a lot of journos access to his first press conference. It's like, well, hang on a second. Did you do that when Maurizio Pochettino took over? No, you didn't. Scores of journalists were refused entry because Jose Mourinho's in town and you've got to be careful about what you ask him and he has to have everything that he wants. And I do believe that, listen, he might bring Spurs a trophy, but I think that's because he will manage to convince Daniel Levy that winning the Carabao Cup should be a priority. Now, personally, I do think that it is a priority. Now, this is a brilliant little thing that I've got here. Circus, indeed. So,
his
Chelsea,
last clubs.
This is brilliant. So, Stamford Chidge has given me a wonderful piece of paper here that says, spells out circus if you consider the first letters of Chelsea, Inter, Real, Chelsea, United, Spurs. That's incredible.
All the teams he's managed.
All
apart from
the
Porto.
Teams he's managed.
And it spells
very
circus.
Good. It does
which
spell
is what
circus.
He is.
So that could be circus. if you include Porto.
No, we don't include
circus
Porto.
Chelsea, okay.
Inter,
okay.
Real Madrid.
No, I've got it.
Chelsea,
it's just speaking
United,
to me as if I don't
Spurs.
Understand and I'm mentally deranged here. But no, I've got it. Yeah.
That's what it says on your biography. Yeah. Helping you out.
Yeah. But I do believe that, listen, I do think Spurs do need to win a trophy. And That's why he's gone. But it's been a bugbear for me that Spurs fans almost felt like they're above the Carabao Cup, that they're above the FA Cup. I do believe that Pochettino had a great chance to win a League Cup. You know, he had a chance to do that. And just get
year.
A trophy in the cabinet, not this year. But he did have an opportunity to do it. So just go ahead and do it. Mourinho will probably come in, put all his eggs in the Carabao Cup basket and win a trophy.
He won't because they're out of it.
Well, sure. Okay, sorry.
Colchester knocked him out.
Colchester did, of course. But at the start of next season, I manage he'll probably go all out to win that trophy and then that buys him another year.
But here's the thing, Matt, that I don't get. You know, and I compared him. He's like as I said on here the other day, he's like a Big Sam for big clubs. You know, he's like brought in to try and win a club a trophy when they're desperate for a trophy as opposed to Sam rescuing them from relegation. But I don't understand it. You know, everybody, all of my Spurs mates that I know pride themselves in the fact that they bring youngsters through, they play a certain way, they're doing it the right way, they're doing it organically, they don't spend lots of money. I cannot see him abiding by that philosophy at all. For him, it's to win at all costs. Screw the academy. We're not into that. You know, buy me loads of players who will help me do that. I don't care if they're 45 or whatever. That's how he wins. And that is so not what they've been doing. And then he'll leave it all in a complete mess in 3 years' time. And as a Chelsea fan, I'm delighted by that.
I'm confused because I thought these were the best five seasons Spurs has ever had.
Well, yeah. You know, how many trophies did they win? And that's the point. I won't say who it was because it's unfair because it just is. But I spoke to a very good and old journalist friend of mine who happens to be a Spurs fan, and his point was absolutely valid. He said, "Look, we just want to win something. We're desperate to win something, and maybe that's what he will do. Maybe he will get that monkey off that back." And he'll win them something, and maybe that will allow them to then bin him, and then they'll go back to doing what they have been doing.
But it won't be the league. So the last time they won the league was 1961.
Yeah, nearly 60 years ago.
Indeed.
Even we only had to wait 50 years.
Yeah.
Well, he believes they can win the league next season, which he did say in that opening press conference. We're not finished on Mourinho, which is a sad thing. We are going to continue this debate after this on the Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport.
COTA just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your COTA fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with COTA. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
We've all got one, and we're not afraid to put it on display. Our opinions, that is. Share yours now at Love Sport Radio on Twitter or call us 0208 70 20 558. Love Sport Radio, your fan station.
It's a Chelsea fan show on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the boys from the Chelsea fan cast, Stamford Chidge, and Jonathan Kidd, who has his hands poised, ready, primed to say something.
Na 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 na. Ooh! That's all I wanted to say.
Okay.
In response to anything at all?
It's a Chelsea tune. If you're a Chelsea fan,
don't
do it again.
No, I get it.
You'll,
but I did,
you'll destroy the magic.
I didn't know why you were doing it at that particular moment in time.
I felt that it ought, there ought to be more contact with fans out there who want to know that. Yeah, you see.
Until you've taken my Chelsea away.
Na 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 na.
You don't start me. You know that.
That
it's
is true.
Never ever.
It's one of the great. It's one of the great songs, though. That moment. Na 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 na. Ooh. I love it.
Nice.
I love it. I really
good.
Love that bit.
I sing it in the house occasionally to my wife.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Does she ask you to go outside?
She says, why do you say Chelsea when you could be saying me? And I said,
she's right, yeah, of course.
Yeah. And I said, well, because I love Chelsea more than you, obviously.
No.
Well, I love Tottenham more than you.
And then she stabs you.
Yeah, usually.
Yeah, metaphorically.
Speaking of fans to reach out to, gents, we have had a message in from a Dave of Northwood Hill in London. Now, this is quite interesting and an argument up for debate, I suppose, because there has been a lot of news about this week after Jose Mourinho took the job. And he believes, does Dave, that a major factor in Mourinho joining Tottenham is down to the deal the club have with Amazon. Now, we know that there is a documentary being filmed this season. It was a multi-million pound deal signed by Amazon with Daniel Levy over the summer. So he's already been caught on camera. I would imagine that Mauricio Pochettino has been caught departing. So already, you know, a few months into the documentary, they've got some
incredible footage.
There is drama there. Yeah,
friction.
And I don't know how I feel about the modern day football documentary. I think back in the day, there were much better. Premier
Passions
of Sunderland.
Was great, though.
Brilliant. Yeah.
Brilliant.
I was watching
Liverpool.
This weekend. City, yeah.
Were they Netflix? Yeah,
but they also are a bit fluffy. Almost
mate,
like propaganda.
Right, I've made documentaries and I've had annoying executive producers and series producers saying to me, David, what we need from this documentary, the three most important things you need from an observational documentary. I said, oh, what's that? Is that like, you know, content? No. Tension, drama and jeopardy. You know, and I think, yeah, right. You know, I've been given scripts. This is an observational doc, so you therefore go to film what happens. Okay, you provide a bit of structure around it, but I've been given scripts as to what's supposed to happen for something that you don't know what's supposed to happen. I mean, it's
course.
So unbelievably contrived.
And in football, that's the worst. Suddenly you look at it and you go, well, hang on a second, that's blatantly been manufactured. And I worked at a football club, actually, when they started to do this, and I could tell they were trying to create something that wasn't there. And listen, football clubs generally are dramatic. Things will happen if you just let the cameras roll. Like you said, Premier Passions. Yeah. I don't think anything was set up in that particular documentary, but it was brilliant.
Yeah, brilliant, because, of course, the club is falling apart.
Absolutely.
Which was so superb.
Yeah, and it was so raw.
And you got heroes and villains created as a consequence. And
characters.
And, yeah, real characters coming forward. And also, characters created by their non-appearance. Mm. You then thought, I'm making a judgment. If you know about football, why hasn't that person spoken to the documentary? I thought it was fascinating. But they lucked in, as it were, for that completely.
Yeah,
but to be really honest, I mean, I know what Dave's saying, but I cannot believe that you hire a manager because, you know, it'll make a documentary that's being filmed look better. They've hired Mourinho because they're 14th in the league. It's a good excuse to say, thank you, Maurizio, good night. You've had 5 years. You didn't win us anything. We want to win something because we need to, you know, because you need to. You need to be winning stuff.
But not only that, I think it was a toxic environment on the training pitch
it had
as well.
Yeah, you know, it had gone pear-shaped. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, but also, for that to be the case that Amazon involved, there have to be huge money. I don't think Amazon are putting in 20 million.
Oh, I think they are.
Is it going to be that much?
Multi-million-pound deal, yeah.
Oh, well, if that's the case, it's reasonable because Levy's a businessman first and foremost.
But it'd be interesting. I'd love to know Dave's clarification whether he thinks this is from Spurs' angle. They brought him in because of the deal with Amazon, or whether Jose's looked at it and gone, "Oh, they've got a deal with Amazon." I would imagine that Jose Mourinho wasn't. I mean, yes, it would have come up in negotiations, but it wasn't a trigger for him to take the job.
Well, anyway. Since the BetSafe ads, when he, you know, the when he was the special one, you know, he was doing all that discussion about I'm special, but there is a bet here that isn't special. That one where he was very good. The bizarreness of him acting and being a rather cuddly character as a pundit has been. Not a revelation, but you think, yeah, he can do this in other roles. But so there's a possibility of thinking, yeah, I could become an international film star. You know, you never know.
I'm bored of speaking about Mourinho.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I was going to say that's it, fellas. I think that we've covered it. We've covered it as much as we can. Time will tell, of course, whether he will be a success. But we mentioned those quotes from Frank Lampard at the top of the show, and the fact that he said, "I can firmly say no, and you can replay that in 10 years, it wouldn't happen." That was with regards to him ever taking the Tottenham job. And there's been a great tweet, an article actually this week from Adam Hurry, a journo who works for The Athletic amongst others as well. Very witty journo, Adam Hurry, who has picked up a habit that Frank Lampard seems to adopt in his interviews.
It's a really difficult question.
Is this going to go very quickly through? No, Tony, I suppose it's not a laughing matter.
We scored four, didn't we? We should have won 4-1. No, listen, I joke because I'm proud. I thought, can we get this game called off and replayed? It's gone 3-2. But no, of course.
They've reached out to me to help.
It's very Americanism.
I'm catching on. they've reached out to help me.
But pure performance. I've gone. Pure performance from the lads.
To get on with life. So, yeah, we made the most out of it, but it was an amazing night.
I certainly would. We drew the game, I suppose, so and won it on penalties, but it's completely different.
I know, so you're giving it a lot of drink.
I know, yeah. I'll try and be more refined going forward, but no, listen.
I presumed that question would come quite early, and I would say that...
He hasn't committed a crime, probably other than eating chips in the back of a cab, which is probably a bit out of order for the cabbie. But on a serious note...
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant, Frank Lampard there. I love the fact that he seems to do this. And I hadn't really picked up on it before, but the classic makes a joke, he laughs, and then goes, but no, on a serious note. If you watch it now, from every interview moving forward, he tends to do that in most of his interviews.
Well, I was trying to find a pattern in that, and I couldn't find one. So it's interesting that you've come up with that. Oh. I was listening to it thinking, why are we hearing this?
but on a serious note, we should talk about Man City.
Yeah, okay.
Nice. Yeah. Nice, Chidgey. Nice segue. Okay, so yes, Manchester City this weekend, of course, at the Etihad, gents. Yeah. Not the happiest of hunting grounds in recent seasons for Chelsea.
No, not really. I mean, we've won twice, I think, in the last 10 Premier League games. 3-1 in 2016. And I will never forget the 1-0. In 2014.
Joe Cole scored the goal in the last minute.
Branner in 2014. Right. Well, the reason I'll never forget it is because we had to do it on TV. We were doing the podcast live on TV, watching the game, supposing to be talking about... Of course, none of us could do it because the game was so tense. We were like... the whole match. It was the worst TV and yet the best TV you've ever seen. And there's a wonderful photograph where we kind of captured a still of it when Branner scored and we all just went absolutely loopy because we were up against it. We were not, you know, supposed to win that match and we dug in and we did. Must have been under Mourinho.
It was under Mourinho. Yeah. I remember it. It was the 13-14 season because it was the first season without Sir Alex in the Premier League and it was City and Liverpool vying for the title. And Jose did a classic Jose
Mourinho
at that time, and which he'll probably continue to do, to be fair, and went to the Etihad. Yeah, 1-0. Ivanovic, sort of a left-foot half-volley, sort of
he
deflected,
wasn't
it?
From about 25 yards. Mm. We absolutely were. I've got a lovely picture of it, I said. It's
was I there? Not,
yeah, you were there. I'll dig out the picture while we're in the
did
break.
Did I go mad?
Yeah, we all went absolutely potty.
Oh, okay.
You, me, Darren and Russ.
Didn't I do my usual understated?
No, you weren't at all. We all lost it because it was so tense.
Okay.
But you're right, Matt. I mean, last year was one of the worst... I mean, we talked about this on Monday and people said to me Bournemouth was worse, but I don't think... I've got a suspicion, Matt, that I was on air on the Sunday show and you were on air at the same time and we were watching it live and I was just...
Did you not try to find a recording?
Well, I can't remember how I was like, apart from the fact that I think it was... I just remember it being, you know... It was just horrible. The horror. I mean, can you remember what I was like?
It was dreadful. Yeah, you were beside yourself. I do remember it. I'd forgotten about it.
Yeah,
yes, we were on air at the same time.
I think the low point for me was Barkley's attempted header back, wasn't it? When he headed it straight to Aguero.
Can you remember? I can't remember. It seems so long ago.
That we were on air?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I do remember that we were on air. I wouldn't have remembered had you not mentioned it. But yes, we were. And you were naturally beside yourself. You were seething.
I was seething.
Yeah, for want of a better word. It was quite
disappointed
difficult.
At the time. I must admit,
a defining defeat under Sarri?
I think it was the worst one. It was a humiliation.
I don't think
the players chucked it in. They chucked it in after 20 minutes. That was the worst thing for me. I don't mind them being rubbish. I don't mind them being outplayed. But I object fundamentally to them chucking it in, and I felt that they did that.
There was
day.
A period, though, in the second half of that game, I remember, where we came back in it, and it's almost as if I didn't quite understand why they'd done that. They started playing
quite well. It's only 2-0 in the second half, to be
and
fair.
Indeed, it was. Perhaps they thought, yeah. But I think the two goals were scored after they'd come back in it, and then it all fell away again. I was rooting for Sarri for a period because I was seeing I was hoping that somehow it would work. And in the sense, it did work towards the end of the season because they all began to, I don't know whether they threw the shackles off a bit and played the way they wanted to play, but it all seemed to come together. As a consequence, they ended up winning Europa League.
I disagree.
But in what way?
I think the players just ignored them and played like they wanted to play, and that's why they played better.
No, I'm sorry. I have to disagree with your disagreement.
I disagree.
Because you're disagreeing with my disagreement.
I'm disagreeing with you disagreeing.
Oh, so there are four disagreeings involved in this. Okay. But for me, they still played to a rigid structure towards the end of the season, but I think they seemed to get it a bit more. But and the only reason they finished third was because everybody else around them was dreadful and has continued that dreadfulness into this season, which is something I never expected to happen, especially with Spurs, who Champions League was clearly the only thing they were interested in at the time. But we mustn't talk about Spurs. But for me, yes, that was an appalling, capitulation.
Yeah. Biggest capitulation since Singapore, mate.
I wouldn't go that far because that's a war.
And this is true.
This is football.
But you know what George Orwell said?
No, what did he say?
Well, paraphrasing him, he said that football was war without the bullets.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think he ever said that.
No, but he paraphrased it. I've read the original article.
Okay.
Well, yes. It was in the Trinity Mirror.
Was it
published
indeed?
In about 1939? Funnily enough.
Yep.
And it was based on. He went to see an Arsenal game where they were apparently attacking the players. So you think Arsenal fans are bad now?
But hadn't Arsenal had their best decade ever?
I don't know. I think he was basically saying that, and this is an interesting point, actually. I love going down a rabbit hole like this. But basically, he was saying that people who watch sport fundamentally are far too emotionally engaged in it and take it too seriously and basically allow all their anger and frustration out by going to a sporting event.
Absolutely.
And he was talking not just about football, he was talking about all sorts of other sports. He was also talking about the nationalism involved with it, so things like the Olympics, and we all get too far too nationalistic about our football. But he, you know, that's hence where it get the war without the bullets comes in. He never actually said war without the bullets, but fundamentally that's what he was talking about. Okay. It's a really good article. George Orwell writes very well, actually, funnily enough.
He does indeed.
Who knew?
Other historical figures in the literature will be discussed by Chidge next week at the same time.
It's all right. I'm happy to do that. Happy to educate you.
This is the Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport. Next up, more looking ahead. I don't know what's going to be next up on the Chelsea Fan Show, but looking ahead more to that City game.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
It's the Chelsea Fan Show on Love Sport. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the boys from the Chelsea Fancast, Stamford Chidge and Jonathan Kidd.
Kiddo.
Now, of course, Chelsea have lost three of their last four Premier League games away at Manchester City, but they are on course to win eight consecutive away games in all competitions for the first time in the club's history. Yes.
Wow, is that the first? Wow,
yep.
I did not
it
know
It does
that.
Seem like every week with Lamps there is another record to be broken.
Yeah.
Whereas with Sarri, it just seemed that there was a record to be broken for the wrong reasons.
I'm sorry, I won't have this.
You've forgotten that, have you?
No, I won't have this.
I know you're getting on a bit,
You're going at Sarri again in
I'm
a way
I'm just pointing
that,
out fact.
No, I know, but nonetheless, it wasn't complete gloom and doom. It was at this time of the season when we lost 6-0. It was pretty gloomy and doomy. But let's be fair. He did win the Europa League at the end of the season. So let's give him that. But God, Chidge has given me such a hostile look, everybody in Radio Land.
The rubbish I have to put up with on this show, honestly. Oh.
Well, speaking of the game, Mourinho,
Spurs, Johnny's love for Spurs.
It's all going all tangents today, isn't it?
I was merely pointing out a fact.
Yes, no, but what we need to discuss is Frank likely to win away, which would be fantastic. And I think he has a great possibility of winning away, just because this is a very exciting, youthful team who can't seem to stop scoring.
And you've lost, what, 1 in 11? So, the club are playing very well. Realistic title challengers, by the way.
Yeah.
This is huge. Because, what,
really?
If you win at the Etihad, if you win at the Etihad, that puts like City out of the title race.
I like this City out. Glass
and then we hand it to Liverpool.
Empty attitude. No, I don't think we do. I think Liverpool can't keep it up. They just can't.
I think they can.
Matt makes a valid point.
In which
point.
Case, they're not then. They're not title contenders, Chelsea. Liverpool keep winning.
Matt makes a valid point because we'll be on 29 points. City will be on 25. So that's only 4 points. It's not a lot, really, is it? I mean, you know, we're still 8 points behind Liverpool. You know, we're not in a title challenge. I don't believe.
So then you're saying the title race is done. It's over. It's already over. Because
I mean, you will get this, and we've talked about this many a time. I'm still waiting for the blip to happen because I cannot believe that this upward progression is going to keep progressing.
Well, I'm the same with Liverpool. I'm waiting for the blip to happen. Yeah. They've been very fortunate in some of these games. So,
But I do see. I get where you're coming from, Chidge, and it will happen at some point.
Because
perhaps
they're young
at Christmas,
players, young,
we're heading
into
a very difficult period of the season.
What you don't tend to get with young players, although I mean, let me say what I was going to say first. What you don't tend to get with young players is consistency. Having said that, what we've had so far this season is they seem to be learning really quickly, taking everything on board, and getting better and better and better.
Is it not
so,
because he's also got the combination of experience with the youth? Kovacic and Jorginho aren't. Yeah. Aren't youngsters
different players
since
last season?
Under performances, Sarri. yeah, under Sarri because they were playing.
I know you're deliberately
attempting to pull Mplonka. I understand that. he is doing it now, everybody at home.
well, he's not doing that. He's poking you.
Yeah.
you have to say something else after that. But anyway,
yeah.
Look, the bottom line is that. Maybe they are very good.
Chidge, stop
maybe,
it.
Maybe I may
stop
shut
it,
up.
Chidge.
Maybe I shouldn't be, you know, stuck in this kind of time warp of thinking it's all going to go horribly wrong and being a pessimist. And that's what you're normally like, actually. So I don't know. Maybe I've caught it from you.
No, I veer.
Yeah. Maybe they will get better and better. I mean, I'll tell you what is interesting, actually, is the fact that, you know, City have got the best home record in the league. We've got, I think, together with Liverpool, the best away record in the league. And also, of course, we've got a lot better defensively, actually. I think we've only let in 4 goals in the last 5 games or something like that.
Other than the Ajax game.
Whereas before, well, in the league, you know. I think the reality is that we're getting better defensively, I think, certainly in the Premier League. And that bodes well.
We may be undone by the fact that they are such a good going forwards. But
we can have a go at them.
But we'll score.
And they're not very good at the back. And you've got Tammy Abraham who scored more Premier League goals away from home this season than any other player.
Yeah, but it's not just Abraham. We've got all the others. You've got Mason Mount on fire. You've got Willian on fire. You've got Ron thinks is going to
I don't
to
Barcelona. About, we've heard about that.
No, we didn't know about that one. That's a new one.
About that.
Yeah.
Look. Bottom line,
I thought you liked Ron.
I do like Ron, but you know, I've heard that rumor. We've heard that rumor.
No, but this has now been authenticated.
Yeah, but you know,
okay.
I want to talk about City.
Well, let's talk about who's going to be playing, though, gents. Right? So, Reece James obviously came in. Will he be starting? Will Dave be starting? We've got Jorginho. We've got Kovacic. We've got Kante in the middle of the park. What are you thinking Lamps is going to adopt at the Etihad?
Picking up on what we said on Monday, if we reverse it round, the implications are, if you pick, I mean, I think he'll pick Aspie, and I don't think he'll pick James. We do think he'll pick Emerson, which makes sense. Alonso can't play him against that lot.
No.
He will play Jorginho, Kovacic and Kante. Yes. You can't not play any one of those three. So that has implications for who goes wide. You can say, well, how can he drop Mason Mount? And there's a case for saying, well, you can't. But on the other hand, I think what is interesting is the way that Liverpool played against City the other week. And they attacked City down the flanks. They rinse them down there, and they were they look very
which is
vulnerable.
We have the ability to do.
So there is a case for saying maybe you don't play Mount. Maybe you play Pulisic.
There'll be some Pulisic, only 25% chance of playing.
Well, like Frank said he was in contention today in the presser.
He said that, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
So let's assume
he's
fit.
I think he'd play him because he seems to be playing a little better than Odoi. He seems to be getting better
the past
and better.
Three, Pulisic, right?
Yeah, but he's also he's looking much more confident. Since, in fact, that implosion where everybody from America said that everybody was being xenophobic and not playing him, which was
he's done really, really well.
He's done really well.
He's looking
he's had little touches of Hazard in him, which
I like the look of him.
Yeah, I just think he's getting better and better.
Confidence again and being managed really well, I think, actually.
Yeah.
Look, frankly, I would rather we did play Mount. I mean, the thing is that when Kanté was playing earlier in the season, Mount was being pushed up front and wide. I think Mount is so fundamental to the way that Frank wants to play because he seems to have more energy than anybody else and he presses so aggressively.
Absolutely.
And he breaks the lines. Frank's always talking about midfield players who can break the lines and he gives you that. So for me, Mount is fundamental to the way that Frank likes to play and I'll be amazed if he doesn't start.
He's so skillful on both feet as well, Mount.
He's a hell of a player. I didn't know this. I found this on the old Chelsea Rick's bit, as I like to call it. On the Chelsea website, that Mason Mount is, I think he's either the second youngest to Jimmy Greaves or the youngest Chelsea player to score for England. There's like days in it. It's not like by a huge amount. They're both 20 years old and about 250 days or something.
I thought it was fabulous him scoring for England as well. I know they weren't very good, Montenegro.
No, it was great to see him score. But I'm a bit worried about Hudson-Odoi.
It wasn't Montenegro. It was,
you talked about Hudson-Odoi a minute ago. I'm a bit worried about him.
Yeah.
You know, that's a big injury he came back from.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to, you know, be down on him. I think he needs a bit of time. But he's such a talent and, worries me.
He hasn't been bad this season, but he's not perhaps been the revelation everybody was hoping for. But then...
I think there's a bit of pressure that's been heaped upon his shoulder. I think, you know, again, this is where Frank will come in. I think the benefit you get with Frank as manager, apart from all the other obvious reasons, is that this is a guy who gave up playing not that long ago. I think he's very much in tune with the modern footballer and how to treat these guys and how to get the best out of them and how to be sensitive to what they need. So, I mean, we talk about Pulisic, and I think there's a very good example there. Everybody was, like, creating a huge amount of noise outside of the Chelsea bubble, and I think he was very shrewd in the way that he kind of protected Pulisic from that.
Do you think that teams
can do the same with Odoi?
Can express the personality of their manager.
Yeah.
And in this instance, because I absolutely think that this is actually the embodiment of how Frank wants to play and would love to play. Absolutely. Hardworking, skillful, scoring goals will. I just think it's his personality being expressed through the
team. Yeah, to add to that, I was thinking about this today, actually, because, I mean, I really don't know how this is going to go, Matt. I cannot call this, whether we'll be exposed defensively or whether we go for it and expose them or whether we cancel each other out and it's a draw. But one thing that gives me heart that I have seen about this Chelsea side is exactly that. They've got heart. I mean, the way they came back against Ajax, I mean, a lot of teams would have curled up, you know, just said, well, we're not going to get anything out of this game. Let's just keep it to 4-1 and try and keep it respect. They didn't. They battled and battled and battled, and, you know, but for a stupid VAR decision, they would have won that game. And I think, you know, somebody said somewhere, very intelligent thing, that remember with these youngsters, they've gone all the way through their career winning all the time, winning trophy after trophy after trophy. This lot know how to win. They've got a winning mentality. And I think that's what we're seeing. These kids do not give up. And the old guys are also used to winning.
Indeed.
And I think maybe that's what the kids are doing. The kids are re-energising some of the older guys. It's amazing to see.
I think you raised some very valid points, the pair of you, and I think you're bang on with what you're saying about Frank Lampard, just being able to relate to this group of players. We are going to move on shortly and speak to Andy Hampson, North West football journalist for the Press Association. But before we do that, fellas, a very, very quick quiz before we move on.
We've got a quiz?
Very quick. Just one question.
Yeehaw!
We always like to chuck in one question.
Like a quiz.
I know stats tended to only begin when the Premier League started. Don't tell Kerry Dixon that. But the first meeting between Chelsea and City in the Premier League was a 1-0 victory for Chelsea at Main Road in August 1992. Who scored the goal?
Vinnie Jones.
Nope. But close.
I'm just thinking.
Close, but no cigar.
92.
Johnny Spencer.
No, Tony Cascarino.
Oh, close. That's close.
Okay, it's the other one then.
Yeah. is the other one.
Robert Fleck.
No.
Very similar stature.
Oh God, it's Harford.
Mick Harford. Correct. Oh,
well, pulled it out of the bag, son.
Pulled it out.
Well done.
Chelsea fan show.
Well done.
Love Sport Radio, the station giving fans a voice. The Opposition View on Love Sport.
Indeed it is, the Opposition View on Love Sport. This, the Chelsea fan show. Myself, Matt Beadle, here with the boys from the Chelsea Fancast, Stamford Chidge.
Hello.
And Jonathan Kidd. Of course, Hello. Chelsea make that trip to the Etihad this weekend. A team, by the way, who are sitting pretty on 399 Premier League wins.
Who are?
Manchester City. They are gunning for number 400. And a man to tell us whether they will get that 400 is Andy Hampson, Northwest football journalist for the Press Association. Andy, great to have you on. Will City make it 400 this weekend?
Hello, guys. Yeah, good to speak to you. Well, this is a very interesting question because after what happened at Anfield a couple of weeks ago, things are up in the air a bit, really. City played pretty well that day, but they didn't get the win. They weren't clinical enough. Liverpool were. City have had to spend the last couple of weeks licking their wounds a little bit. So they're coming back tomorrow to play Chelsea. I think they'll be fairly fired up. But obviously they're playing a Chelsea team that are in pretty good form themselves. So, hey, it could go either way, really.
Could be a draw.
I'm not too sure.
Yeah, what do you reckon? Four all? Three all? What do you reckon?
I tell you what, Andy, you know, all the press, you know, most pundits, you look at the bookies and all of that, everybody thinks it's a nailed on City win. And I honestly have no idea how this will go. You know, it could go anywhere, and I get that. But I don't think it's a nailed on City win at all. I mean, they've got a few injury issues. Their defence has been vulnerable this season. Obviously, they are coming off the back of losing to Liverpool, which they would have hated. I mean, of course, they might bounce back, which is a worry for Chelsea. But they have vulnerabilities. And in Chelsea, you've got a side that's doing incredibly well away from home. And I think, you know, this kind of go-for-it, gung-ho attitude that they have, and they get in your face, and they can create chances, and they can put them away. So I don't for one minute think it's a nailed-on City win.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, you're saying that there are vulnerabilities, and obviously Liverpool exploited them ruthlessly a couple of weeks ago, but it's not just Liverpool. I mean, they lost to Wolves a few weeks ago, and they lost to Norwich earlier in the season. There are weaknesses there for teams to get at. Guardiola seems to have lost confidence in the Stones-Otamendi pairing. You know, there is only two fit senior centre-halves at the moment, and he doesn't want to play them together. His best centre-half at the moment is Fernandinho, who's a converted midfielder. He's having to play him with one of the two, and that means Fernandinho's not playing in midfield, which is his best position. So there's a weakness there. You know, I think City are there to be got at. That said, when they're on form and they click, obviously they're attacking trio of Aguero, De Bruyne and Sterling have been absolutely magnificent this season, and you know, once they get the ball, you can be in trouble. Aguero did have a bad day at Anfield, but
well, he always does, to be fair, doesn't he?
Yes, he does. He's always struggled there, but he's not struggled anywhere else.
Well, I was going to say,
not against Chelsea, that's
yeah,
for sure.
To cheer you up, Andy, he's I did this the other day, but he scored he scored 15 goals in 19 appearances against Chelsea in all competitions. 10 in 13 in the Premier League. He likes scoring against Chelsea, and that worries me, actually, because he's a good striker.
Oh, he's an absolutely fantastic player. You know, year after year, he keeps producing good. He's a better player now, actually, than he was before Guardiola arrived. He's improved his all-around game. He helps in and around the box, brings other players into the game, and obviously he's still an absolutely lethal finisher. Yeah, he's, you know, still on top of his game.
Chelsea had an opportunity to sign him when he was with Atleti, and the rumour was that John Terry said
denied.
We denied it subsequently.
But he always does, doesn't he?
Of course
JT?
He do. But he didn't play very well, I remember, against Chelsea in a Champions League game.
JT had him in his pocket.
That's right.
But he scored two goals.
That's exactly
the next
what
match.
That's what he did. He scored two goals in the away game. Exactly. But yeah. But we've really regretted not buying him.
Andy, talking of the Champions League, you know, I cannot believe that we're playing Man City tomorrow and we are sitting in third while they are in fourth, and that they lost to Liverpool the other week, which many people think that's given. I mean, I hesitate to say handed Liverpool the title when you're only about 13 games in, but they're in the box seat. Do you think that Guardiola might focus his attention more on the Champions League, or, you know, maybe write this season off as a title winning season or not?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that has crossed my mind. I don't think I don't think we're going to see it just yet, because at City, they're almost, they're as good as through to the last 16 already. You know, they've got this group pretty much sewn. They just need a point next week to do the job. So I think they'll just keep, you know, trying as hard as they can in the league for the moment. But you know, when we get to February, March, if they're still, you know, a significant number of points behind, I think then we may well see Guardiola start to prioritise the Champions League and start rotating with it in mind, really, playing his best team in the week in the Champions League games and resting players at the weekends. Because I think that's the one he really, really wants to win now. He's won the Premier League for the last couple of years. And obviously, he gets his players wound up. You know, he's so intense. He gets some players fired up to, you know, play at such a high standard. And they've been at that level for 2 years now. I think there's inevitably going to be a bit of a drop off at some point. It's just happened this season. Obviously, Liverpool have had to meet City standards to you know, they've realised they've got to, City have raised the bar so high, they've realised they've got to meet those standards, and they're not for relenting at the moment. They're just absolutely flying. So while City are capable of getting back into the title race, it does depend on whether Liverpool will drop points. It doesn't look like they will. So, well, it doesn't look like they're going to drop many at the moment. So yeah, come the new year, City may well have to start to realign their priorities and focus on the Champions League.
Andy, just to quickly touch on what you said regarding John Stones and Nicolas Otamendi as well, and that pairing, and the fact that Pep Guardiola seems to have given up on that. Can that not be attributed as mismanagement on the part of Guardiola? Because this is a player that he brought in John Stones for, you know, 50-odd million pounds. He's got no centre-backs currently fit, bar those two. Surely you've got to try and figure out a way for them to play together? Or is it simply that he just doesn't rate John Stones, or that he doesn't rate Otamendi, and one of them has to go? Because if you've got two centre-backs at the club and you've got no other ones fit, surely you have to play those two.
Yeah, I agree with you. It does seem strange, but the game is Norwich here in the season they've lost, that they were both pretty calamitous. They both made mistakes in that game. And I think after then, Guardiola decided, I just can't trust them together anymore. And he's got Fernandinho back. And Fernandinho's done a decent job. He's a good stopgap, I think, in that position. He could probably get a game at a mid-table team as a centre-back, but really, he's not a top-line centre-back. City do need to look to strengthen there. I'm sure they're aggressive now.
Has he got anybody right lined up for January, do you think?
Well, I think they've got to be thinking about it now, because as soon as Vincent Kompany announced he was leaving at the end of last season, I think they should have changed their priority from Rodri and looked at a centre-back. They did try to get Harry Maguire. It didn't work out. But they didn't seem to have any backup plan, so they've got to be thinking about it, because, yeah, if he doesn't want to play Stones and Otamendi together, we're still a couple of months away from Laporte being fit, so they've really got to do something. Otherwise, you know, they will be having to write this season off.
Yeah, indeed they will. Andy, before you go, it's been great having you on. A quick score prediction from you?
Oh, goodness. I'm gonna say 2-2.
2-2. Nice. Okay, Andy, great having you on. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you, Andy.
That was Andy Hampson, Northwest football journalist for the Press Association. There was one thing he said there that I didn't massively buy into, and that was the fact that after two seasons, Pep's gone, oh, do you know what?
No.
I don't know if I've got it in me to win another Premier League. That's what makes you a great manager. You have to go, no, I'm going all out to win the trophies. And if I want to win the Champions League, I've got to go all out to win the Premier League.
You can't pick and choose. He gets annoyed when he doesn't win.
Yeah. And, he'll be gutted.
And yeah, and you can see it in his face.
He wants to win everything, doesn't he?
He just gives dreadful interviews if they've lost.
Terrible.
Whereas if they're winning everything, he's charm personified. But
it's kind of really bizarre that they're fourth in a sense, isn't it? I mean, you know, they haven't really lost that many matches. I mean, they've lost three matches.
That's because Chelsea been so good.
It is, and it's also a bit of a disgrace. And
the centre back issue
for me is one, and it's a bit akin to Chelsea actually in 2007. I think it was when there was a real dearth of centre backs. You had no one fit. The only player I think was fit was Boularoos, and you had to play him alongside Michael Essien at the back.
Wow, yeah. I remember that.
And it was a time when you played Wickham in the semi-final of the Carling Cup at the time.
Yeah.
And Essien had to play at centre-back and got muscled out by Jermaine Easter.
We lost 2-1, didn't we?
No, it was 1-1.
Was it?
And then you won the second leg 4-0.
I was so there that I've remembered.
But I just think for a club like Manchester City, regardless of the injuries you've got, to be in the situation they're in is quite staggering, really.
Well, they've said that. I mean, I think, you know, you need to have the context around this as well, because they got Laporte, which was brought in to replace Kompany.
Sure.
And of course, he got injured
And he's been the biggest loss.
Yeah, and they couldn't have predicted that. And, of course, they've got John Stones, who's supposed to be a centre-back, but clearly Guardiola doesn't fancy. So he's put Fabinho... Is it Fernandinho in there as an auxiliary centre-back.
Yeah.
Very wrong manager. That's
never really going to work.
But that's why I was asking about mismanagement, because this is a player that clearly Pep was desperate to sign in John Stones.
But he wouldn't have needed to do that had Laporte not got injured.
No, but also the fact he spent a lot of money on John Stones.
Wasn't that from a different period where he was playing better, because he hasn't even been figuring for England?
So has he not improved him as a player then?
No, he clearly hasn't.
Maybe he's not capable of being improved.
Yeah, exactly. Like some players.
Okay,
it doesn't really matter how much you educate them.
Absolutely. We are at the end of our hour, Jen. Oh, it's always
really?
A shame
we
when we get to this
hour?
Time on a
You don't
a
need
Friday
to do the
evening.
Lead show. You could have us.
Kiddo's checking the time to make sure that I'm telling the truth.
I thought you might have been just ending it 10 minutes early.
I've not been fabricating.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great? And then you could just talk about whatever you wanted while you ushered us out of the studio.
Right. Before you go, kiddo, quick score prediction from you, please.
3-3.
Wow. 3-3 this weekend.
And I said 3-3 on Monday. I cannot change my mind. I'm saying 3-3 tonight.
Lovely stuff. We will find out whether those predictions are indeed correct next week on the Chelsea Fan Show at 7 p.m. We'll see you then.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.